This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the Danish voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Danish, indeed. We're not talking about the pastry.
We're not talking about the pastry. You've been on another excursion.
I have. I have been into Scandinavia. That's where I believe Denmark is, in Scandinavia. See that? Geography. Did that at school. Got a C. Did really well.
Very good. Very good. Northern Europe. Yes.
Northern Europe. Indeed. Northern Europe. And you know what? The flight from England to Denmark. So the place I actually went in Denmark, which is, I think I'm pronouncing this correctly, Aarhus.
I'd say that is, for an ignorant Englishman, a decent pronunciation of Aarhus.
Thank you. Yes. And that's exactly what I am. Incredibly ignorant. But the actual flight was from Stansted to Aarhus. £16.
Wow. Any extras on that?
Oh, no, you pretty much stood in the aisle, you know, to get there for that. But no, £16, really impressed. But yeah, I did go there. So the story goes that the manager is Uwe Rosler, who was my manager back at Brentford back in the day. The, I want to say, director of football. I believe that's the role that he's got. Is Stigginger Bjørnaby, the old left back.
Of Liverpool. Yes.
And they were playing against Midtjylland, who of course are linked with Brentford. And Jonas Lerzl was in goal for Midtjylland. So it was more, I wanted to catch up with Uwe. I haven't seen him for a long time. And we connected on Instagram a little while ago and said, oh, you'd have to come over for a game. I thought that'd be a really cool thing to do. I like to travel the world and watch different games of football, get a feel for different environments. So that was the reason for going over there. Ended up going out for dinner with Uwe after. So it was great to catch up on some of the glory days, some of the Brentford glory days, which we did. And Stig came out as well. So it was
Uwe Rosler? Did he not?
I mean, you know, dropped is such a harsh term, you know?
The glory days of that time you left me out of the squad.
Do you know what? I was his captain. I was his captain for a season. And then the following season, I mean, it was semi-dropped, semi-injury related, semi-self-inflicted. There was a lot of things going on. So I think to say dropped is a really harsh term. That wasn't quite the case. But no,
Read the book. So we need to
it's
do.
All
read
in
the
there.
Book.
It's all in there. Yeah, read the book. Yeah, amazon.com/graduation. In fact, I don't think that takes you to the book. So don't do that web address that I've just given you. That's going to take you somewhere completely different. But that was really good. I really enjoyed it. And actually, an interesting part of the day, which I've already told you this, but it was games finished. So Midtjylland with a late winner, 0-0. Aarhus down to 10 men early on. Very late on, Midtjylland score a goal. I had to say, and I did say this during the game, I was actually texted my colleagues during the game because I was really enjoying the performance of the Aarhus goalkeeper. He had this side volley that he must have done it five times. That one where it stays chest height, not too long, about 40 yards. He kept doing it out to the fullback, out to the winger. And it was just a thing of beauty. So I've sent a few texts. It was annoying. I couldn't get it on camera. I actually text later in the day, knowing that he knows Kasper because he's in the Danish squad, or has been a lot. Of course, never plays because Kasper always plays. But I knew they knew each other. So I did actually text Kasper later in the day, and he said straight away about the side volley and just how good it was. But anyway, interesting. I'm sat there after the game in the like players' bar, so everyone's in there having their post-match food. And the Aarhus goalkeeper came up to me and said, oh, you're Richard Lee. And I was like, oh, you know, must remember me from Watford or Brentford, who knows? But no, he said, oh, you're Richard Lee. No, I listened to the podcast.
Wow, there we go. And then...
So there you go. There you go.
And then he said...
And then he said, what's it called again? Is it the Richard Lee podcast? Like, no, it's Goalkeepers Union. And I then explained there's a guy called Matthew Beadle that's involved and didn't really ring a bell, but he was very excited nonetheless.
So he didn't say, where's Matt? Is Matt not here with you to do the podcast?
Look, no one name checks you. Are you going to keep doing this forevermore? Like wanting someone to finally name check you? Look, maybe someone's out there. If you're out there listening now and you want to email or tweet, just know that Matthew's self-esteem is so low right now. So just any love that you could give him would be appreciated.
Jesper Hansen is the name of this goalkeeper, Jesper, by the way. Hansen, we should name check him, shouldn't we?
So 37 years old, I think he is. As I say, he's kind of always been in and around the Danish squad. But of course, you know, Kasper's been an ever-present for so, so long now. But no, I was really impressed on that. He made a brilliant save down low to his right. Jonas Lerzl played well as well for Midtjylland. So of course, he was on loan at Brentford, wasn't he, back end of last season. Made two key saves. Really interesting game, actually. I'd say that Aarhus didn't play brilliantly first half, but then they went down to 10 men after about 20 minutes. And actually, it was one of those games that could have gone either way. Lerzl's made a couple of key saves. And then, yeah, I felt for Jesper because it was 2 minutes to go. It's one of them games that had they have got a result, I think his performance would have got a lot of credit because he was, as I say, he was excellent on the day and probably deserved something better out of the game.
Okay, well, very good. It's not the first time, not the last time, sorry, that we're going to be talking about Danish goalkeeping in this podcast, which is an unintentional link, but we will be talking about other Danish goalkeepers or goalkeepers that play for Danish outfits later in the pod.
Well, there you go. What a teaser that is.
And the listeners just can't wait. Jesper is on tenterhooks right now. He cannot wait on the edge of his seat.
Who could it be? Let's crack on.
Actually, in response to, very quickly, your claim there that my self-esteem is low, we have had some correspondence in. Do you want to hear it?
Ah, oh, go on.
So this is a WhatsApp, and it's my fault for not getting back to this WhatsApper quick enough in time to actually give their name on the pod. So they didn't leave their name, but they did send us in a WhatsApp. So I'm going to read it out quickly for you, okay? It starts with, "Hey, Matt and his friend."
Wow. This is the only reason you're reading it out. This is going to be a terrible message, but go on.
What a start to a message. "Hey, Matt and his friend. I'm an American university goalkeeper and an avid football fan. I watch the Premier League games on the USA Network with American pundits and have noticed that they seem noticeably softer and less harsh on Premier League goalkeepers. They're quicker to give praise and tend to try and give better explanations when a goalkeeper concedes a goal that they feel he should have saved. I listen to you guys talk about what English pundits say, and I'm always shocked. Even the English pundits on our network aren't as close to us being as harsh. My question is, do you think that we will see a rise in the number of international goalkeepers in the Premier League in the future as English pundits continue to discourage young kids in England from playing in goal?"
Actually, you know what? It's an excellent message. I'm really annoyed. I was hoping it was going to be terrible given that he didn't name check me. I think he did name check me. I think you've just done that on purpose. But anyway, yeah, look, he's bang on. No, and actually, it's a really interesting point because I think with America in particular, they value their goalkeepers. They always have done. I know it's a bit of a cliche comment, but America have produced good goalkeepers consistently over the years. You think of the goalkeepers that were playing in the Premier League not so long ago, your Casey Keller, Brad Friedel, Tim Howard. Now there's the next band of goalkeepers that, again, have all found their way to the Premier League, not necessarily starting every week at the moment, but no doubt they'll get the chance at some point. But I think a lot of it is that. I know it's really basic psychology, but if you're watching football as a young aspiring goalkeeper, and you're seeing these goalkeepers getting credited in the way that they are. And I watch a lot of MLS, for instance, obviously Jonathan Bond being one of the lads that I work with. I watch pretty much all the Galaxy games, and the amount of times I hear, "Saved by Bond," and they'll actually credit the number of saves that he's made in a game. So at the end of the game, they might have lost 3-0, but Bond came up big with six saves. You know, it's such a different mentality, and they do have so much more appreciation. Did you like my American accent, by the way?
But
they,
I was going to say, was that someone that's sitting on the toilet and straining? Is that what that was? as they're doing their commentary?
Very good. So they do, though. They have a real appreciation for goalkeepers. So I'm watching the game, and I enjoy watching the MLS games because they are that much more positive towards goalkeepers. And even when there are mistakes, you can sense a lot of the time they're almost trying to stand up or protect the goalkeepers. So, yeah, look, I agree entirely. I think it's a real basic psychology, but I just think if you're a young kid watching the Premier League on Sky Sports with the commentators we have now, you're not going to get a particularly favourable impression of goalkeepers. Whereas if you're watching American footage, I do believe it's the same, I'm told, in a lot of European countries, and we're seeing so many of them now produce top goalkeepers. You know, there is that much more positivity surrounding the position.
Good stuff. Okay, thank you for that message. You will send your name over because I have sent you a message to do just that. So we'll read it out next week and make sure that we give you that shout out. But for anyone else who'd like to get in touch, very easy to do so. hello@goalkeepersunion.net, on Twitter @GKUnion, or on our phone number via WhatsApp 075-03-673-020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
As per usual, we shall start in the Premier League. Newcastle 5, Brentford 1. And David Raya, a decent start for him in this game, and then a mix-up playing out from the back. And then, sadly, just one of those days for him and the Bees.
Yeah, and you're right. It was a great save early on. Top hand to his right. Yeah, he's a very explosive goalkeeper. Moves his feet well. Gets off the ground very well. Big save. And then I've watched this a few times. The only thing I could think, it's as simple as he did not see the opposing player. And I don't know why necessarily, because I don't think he's blocked. I don't think his vision's blocked. But the way in which he's passed it, obviously he can't see them. Otherwise, he wouldn't have played that pass. It's not like he's scuffed the pass. He's actually played it exactly as he intended to, but he has just passed it to them. So I know it's such a simple explanation, but it's the only thing I can think of. Otherwise, of course, he's not playing that pass.
It's not too dissimilar, is it? I mean, the incident involving David De Gea and Christian Eriksen earlier on in the campaign at the Brentford Community Stadium was closer, and it was in the box, wasn't it? This was outside the box, but the player in question was Mathias Jensen, who was the player receiving the ball this time out. So it's interesting, the parallels between those two situations, but that is the way that Brentford play. So that pass that David Raya has made out to Jensen isn't out of the ordinary. He was blaming Jensen for not expecting the pass. Jensen was blaming him for, as you say, saying, well, look, I had men on.
And I think the slight difference was the David De Gea one, and of course he got a lot of criticism for it, but actually, you know, in terms of the pass, he did find Eriksen, and then Eriksen wasn't able to get the pass out to the fullback. You know, they sort of give it into the pivot, and then he plays out to the fullback. He wasn't able to do that on the day, whereas this, it was too tight. And that's why I don't know, and again, you know, the fact that then they're having that little bit of back and forth suggests that maybe he did see him, maybe this was intentional, but I'm watching it again and I just think it's such an odd pass to play when the player is that tight. If anything, the opposing player has got the advantage to get there first. So I'm still going to stick with that. I might be miles off and would only know if we spoke to David Raya himself, but yeah, to give him the benefit of the doubt, I just think that he hasn't seen him in that moment. I mean, I did hear the comments after. I think it was Ian Wright, I think, sort of said, you know, the kind of classic one, why do goalkeepers do this? They should just go long. But of course,
yeah,
as you said,
just kick it.
Of course, yeah, it's easy in hindsight when it ends up as a goal. Yeah, you should have kicked it. Yeah, of course you should, because it was a goal. But no, Brentford play this way. They keep possession so often because of it, and they're as good as they are because of it. So, you know, that's never going to be an option. But yeah, this will happen a handful of times a season, probably 2-3 times a season. And unfortunately for them, you know, it was an important time of the game. And in the end, they capitulated a little bit thereafter.
A word on the own goal scored by Ethan Pinnock. That type of scenario for a goalkeeper, what's the best thing a goalkeeper can do there? Because that's not, I mean, the goal that we've spoken about already, that was the only error of sorts from Raya. All the others, not necessarily anything he could have done.
No, and that's an annoying one, the own goal, because it looks bad, it looks untidy, and again, to the uneducated eye, they might look at it and think, well, surely the goalkeeper's got a call for it, that'll be a classic one. Why didn't he shout for it? Well, you don't, of course you don't. If you're diving out to collect the ball, you're not going to have time, you don't shout for it every time you make a save. So you are going to dive out to collect the ball, and you're just hopeful that yeah, your defenders aren't going to do what he did, which, and again, you get it from the defender's point of view that then he doesn't know the goalkeeper's behind him diving out to collect the ball. So he's trying to get some form of contact to make sure that the opposing player doesn't come in and have an easy finish. So it's just one of those situations where it's a perfect storm of everything that could go wrong. And as you said, one of those days, it ends up being that, because then you know, as a goalkeeper, you know, you've made an error for one of the goals, and then you have another goal that looks as untidy as this. Then naturally, then people will look at it and potentially lay a bit of blame on the goalkeeper. But there's absolutely no blame whatsoever for any of the other four goals, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, over to the Etihad, where Manchester City beat Southampton by 4-0. And Gavin Batsunu, like Raya, a decent start for him. This one inside 60 seconds. I think just watching this one shows how busy a goalkeeper can be when playing against Manchester City. He was regularly under siege, at pace as well. They attack so quickly, Man City. But he kept the score down. Good saves from Jack Grealish and Erling Haaland later in the game. But a tough return for him to City as well.
Yeah. Look, it could have been a lot more, as you say. I think this season, as crazy as it sounds, for a lot of the teams, with the greatest respect to Southampton, but a lot of the teams are mid-table Premier League teams and below. You're going to City and they're not the games that a Southampton need to win in order to have a successful season. And I know that's kind of, you probably wouldn't have ever said that before about the Premier League, but I think it is at a point now with City, very much at this point in the season with this kind of form that they're showing, that I just think, as negative as this might sound, you know, Southampton going into the game, after a tough run as well that Southampton have had, you know, to come away losing 4-0, it's one of those where you always worry that it could be a lot worse. And actually, it could have been, had it not been for Batsunu, as you mentioned, some good saves. Love the one-on-one save late on, where he's got down to his right. And it's that, I mentioned his name far too much on this podcast, but it is that one that like Peter Schmeichel was known for back in the day, where it would be that one-on-one, you're going round and you're diving full stretch to claw it away, scoop it away. I thought that was excellent. Really sharp tip over the bar from close range. Good save to his right-hand side as well. So I thought on the whole, he'll come out with a decent amount of credit. And as much as it was a tough return to City, I think it's certainly one that he will come away with certain positives to take.
I'll allow the Schmeichel reference on this occasion because there is a Danish theme running through this podcast.
Ah,
but thereafter, there mate, there's going to be a ban. I'm putting in a definite ban on Peter Schmeichel moving forward.
I think I've mentioned him in every single podcast. There's like 300 that we've done now. His name has come up at least once in every single episode.
I might have to get a dinger. And every time you mention it, the dinger goes and then you have to do a forfeit at the end of the season for the number of times you've referenced him. Of course, a great goalkeeper and one that we love to reference. Batzuno, who the commentator seemed to have called him. Now, we're not getting this wrong, are we, right? His name is Gavin Batzuno. It's not Batzuno.
Well, that's how it's spelt, with a U.
Right. I mean, the commentator kept calling him Batzuno. Anyway, from a mindset perspective, I just wanted to get this from you, because obviously he left Man City in the summer to go to Southampton. He's returned to his former club, and they've been hammered, Southampton. From a mindset perspective, of course, he was, you know, quite some way off the number one spot, of course, with Edison there, with Zach Steffen there, now with Stefan Ortega there. It was going to take a bit of time for him to potentially get to that position, and he needed to move in order to get back. They have the buyback clause. But what would he be thinking going back to the club that he was at in that position, playing for the Premier League winners, to go back with Southampton? Would any part of him be thinking, flipping heck, I was here, I was doing this, and now I'm here, and I'm getting done 4-0.
No, because I think that there's a few parts to this. I think his career to this point has been handled very well. And that'll be his advisors, that'll be him himself, kind of seeing how a goalkeeper can develop and, you know, the importance of getting games and climbing the levels. Well, to be at his age and now being a number one in the Premier League, let's be honest, how are you ever going to become a number one at Man City? Are you going to be able to do it by just doing the loan journey? Possibly, but it's going to be very tough and it's going to be very long-winded. What he's done now is he's gone somewhere where he is now their asset, so they are inclined to play him, providing he keeps his levels higher than Alex McCarthy. Then, of course, he will always play, and he is now their asset, so they're fully invested into him. He's fully invested into them, and now he's got the platform. Go on and show just how good you can be. So no, I think from a decision point of view, I think it's been handled very well. I think City as well, the way that they manage the club from a business perspective is very good. And I think this is a good example. Yeah, they could have held on to him. I'm sure they could have refused the offers, maybe sent him on loan to the Championship this season or low-end Premier League and gone down that route. But I think they've seen the opportunity whereby saying, look, go on and do what we think you're going to do. And if you do, we probably will buy you back. And we're okay to allow Southampton to make a huge profit on that, knowing that essentially Southampton now is the perfect platform to give him an opportunity to potentially come back one day.
Okay, over to the Emirates now. Arsenal 3, Liverpool 2. And 2 points of interest here I thought were worth talking about. I don't know whether this is anything to flag, you can tell me. But Alisson, playing out from the back inside the opening minute. Now, Liverpool, so this was inside the opening minute of the game, playing it around the back comfortably as they do, defence to midfield, midfield to defence, back to Alisson, lather, rinse, repeat. He's then had to launch one up the pitch, and as a result, Liverpool have lost possession, Arsenal have gained possession. A few passes later, they've then gone 1-0 up. If you fast forward later in the game, he's pinged a lovely ball out to Joe Gomez on the right-hand side, a few passes, and Roberto Firmino equalises for Liverpool. So there's two instances there of Alisson playing out from the back, one where they've scored, one where he has been playing out, kept possession, eventually gone long, they've lost possession, and then conceded.
Yeah, no, it is interesting, because then you don't ever have the counter opposite, where you wouldn't get a commentator like, well, why didn't he just play short? Ridiculous that he keeps launching it. No, because in that moment, I do think he could have taken a touch and he could have played. It was interesting as well that he used his right foot. So the ball being played back, which ordinarily that would be a left foot clearance if you were doing a first-time clearance. But you could see just how much more comfortable he is on his right-hand side.
It was brilliantly done as well. Well executed, wasn't it?
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, he's hit it a good 60 yards with the outside of his boot. You know, whipped it kind of with the hell of a lot of spin as well. And by the way, it was like very much second phase of play, because then the ball, I think they lose a header, and it's still a good 20, 30 yards into the opponent's half, and then they build up and score the goal. So no one's ever going to track it back to Alisson. However, it is, it's fascinating. There you go. That is that counter argument for why do goalkeepers play short? Well, there you go. That's an example. Whether he should have played long or not is up for debate, but he did go long and they've come back and scored. So then that would be the counter argument. Well, surely you've got to just keep possession. That would make more sense in that situation. As I say, I do feel like he had the opportunity to do that. I'm not sure why he went long, whether that
I think he was under pressure. He was under pressure. He kind of had to go long.
Well,
it was a short pass back.
Yeah. I mean, you say that. I mean, obviously we see how, certainly Alisson and Edison in particular, how good they are. They often find solutions when no one else can. But the fact that he's made that decision, then maybe the pressure was that little bit too much. And the other part to this is that you sometimes, and I don't think Liverpool would do this, probably a bit of an old school thing, but certainly when I played, there would be sometimes in the first 10, 15 minutes, the idea of turning the opposition, you know, rather than allowing them to get on top of you. And if you're playing short all the time, suddenly it condenses the space and they can generate a bit of momentum. Often the manager would say, look to turn them early on, just spread the play that little bit. So there might have even been an element of that where the manager said, look, it's okay to mix it up a little bit early on just to make sure that we're not camped in our own half.
Speaking of long balls, Aaron Ramsdale with a massive boomer in the second half. I noticed they did this a fair bit on Sunday, Arsenal, and it nearly resulted in a goal, a mix-up between Alisson and Virgil van Dijk, Gabriel Jesus nearly creeping in. But that ball from Ramsdale, I think it had a bit of snow on it when it came down, didn't it?
Yeah, ridiculous. It's landed just outside the box. A big pitch there as well. But it just shows you, and I know we've had similar conversations before, where sometimes some of the oldest techniques in the book can still pay dividends. You know, you see how often clubs are still using a long throw, or, you know, corners being whipped in under the crossbar, or like this, you know, it's not a side volley. This is a up and under with snow on it. And that used to be, again, going back to when I played, that'll be the one for today, referencing the olden days now that I've seen Uwe over the weekend. But that was part of the strategy as well, that if we were winning 1-0 last 10, 15 minutes, it would just be a big up and under, because it's so ugly and it's horrible to do. But if you catch it well, it does go all the way to the opponent's box. Horrible for a defender to deal with. You don't know who's going to get the second balls, and you get so much ground that you can make up the pitch that, of course, if they're collecting the ball on the edge of their box, it is like an NFL punt when, you know, the NFL player would punt it to the opposition's 2-yard line and they've then got to go the whole pitch in order to score a touchdown. It's very similar in football. If you can get that much distance on it, even if you do lose possession, they're going to have to break down all 11 of you before they have an opportunity of scoring.
Okay, a few more to finish in the Premier League. We'll start with Chelsea. Kepa now in the number one as things stand. Now, this is the first time this has happened since Mendy's arrival. Clean sheet against Wolves, and Graham Potter saying that he's in no rush to label anybody a one or a two. He's basically going to let football decide.
Yeah, and he's made some nice comments. And I think that, again, how often do you see it where there is a change of manager, a slight change of approach, and it can be very good for some and not so good for others? And look, it'll be interesting when it does fully settle down and both fully fit as to what direction he goes in. But certainly this does appear to have given Kepa a new lease of life and some real positive comments coming out of it. Of course, Ben Roberts has gone with the manager, and he's certainly one of the highest regarded goalkeeper coaches in the country, if not the world. So there'd be a slight change there for both goalkeepers, where no doubt they'll be getting some different ideas from him and different level of motivation potentially. So yeah, really interesting times there.
David De Gea, I thought, put in a decent performance for Manchester United in their win at Everton. An all-round good display, even coming for crosses quite good aerially in that clash, I thought. But Leno having a decent game at West Ham for Fulham. However, the victim of Mikel Antonio's spawny goal of the week, Danny Ward, receiving a bit of stick online now from Leicester fans. Don't like to see that, but that is 24 goals conceded so far this season in 9 games. Nottingham Forest again last night. Dean Henderson not receiving stick from the Monday Night Football clan, but they flagged the fact that it's 22 goals conceded by Forest this season, and perhaps the goalkeeper might want to think about that. Of course, it's not always the goalkeeper's fault when goals go in, especially for the two bottom clubs in the Premier League. And Ian Melier, I'm not happy with that play acting at Crystal Palace. Would love to hear your opinion on this, because that's not what we're about.
So you, I'm sure we've mentioned this on the podcast before, you send me all the footage. So obviously we'll go through the footage in the morning and then we talk about all the key points. And you were actually commentating over this footage. So I already know exactly what you think about this, because you were commentating over it. Look, a lot to touch on there. I think the Dean Henderson one, I mean, just even, I just wish someone would show them a simple stat as to the number of shots faced by a Nottingham Forest and a Man City, for instance. I think City have conceded 9 goals, Forest have conceded 22. I don't actually know the answer to this, but my gut says that Forest have had at least double, if not more than double, the shots on target that Man City have. Well, if that's true, then in terms of a ratio, in terms of a save percentage, if you want to go down that route, then, you know, he's performing as well as Edison. He's just busier. So it's just a stupid point to make. And you could sense it was one, Jamie Carragher, it was just thoughtless when he was given the assessment of, you know, the fact they've been beaten outside the box. They scored a lot of goals or conceded a lot of goals from outside the box. And then he makes reference to, you know, if it was a top keeper, and not every goalkeeper is a top keeper. And I'm thinking, and I hadn't seen the goal at this point. Then I see the goal. There's not a goalkeeper in the world that saves that shot. And in fairness to Roy Keane, he actually then jumps in and said, oh, do you know what? I think we've been a bit harsh on the goalkeeper there. It's like, do you think? Yeah, like, of course, you don't save that. Like, not only that, it's a great strike from Ashley Young. It started outside the post. It's come back in, struck with ferocity. And it's one that there's barely any spin on the ball. It is just a bullet into that bottom corner. But again, it was just that kind of thoughtless punditry. But that's, again, what we spoke about at the start of the show. That's the bit where I've got no doubt, if you've got a Kasper Schmeichel or a, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the pundits are out there now, but like a Paul Robinson or Rob Green, no doubt in that moment they'd have been like, whoa, 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 actually look at this on its merits. Do you genuinely think he can save that?
And a quick word on Leno. That goal, horrible to concede goals like that, isn't it? Good saves in the first half, but that final goal from Antonio, horrible to watch.
Yeah, that was. That was definitely a contender for spawny goal of the week. We never really like kicked off with that franchise properly, I feel. Like, normally when you commit to something, you create like a theme tune and we really go down that path. But you never quite did that. It's a shame because I feel like that might have had that. But I did want to mention his save down to the right-hand side because, yeah, I thought this was excellent. The speed of footwork. This would be... Oh, no, John, I'm going to mention him again. Can I mention him one more time?
Go on. This is going to be with the dinger, but I'll allow it.
With the dinger. But it's the save you made against Rapid Vienna, the Peter Schmeichel save, where...
Oh, Schmeichel!
Where he's kind of... I know that one had, like, Gordon Banks-esque, but the actual movement, the pattern of movement, where you're moving over to your left-hand side, set, back down to your right-hand side, sharp. If you watch Leno here, the footwork's brilliant. To get back on the line, allow the angler dive to be forward, back to his right-hand side, scoops it out with pace, with speed, out into a safe area. Yeah, I thought the movement itself, I just thought was excellent. It looks so, so sharp.
Do you know what I'm going to say that's more like?
Go on.
This is the reference you should have used. That was more like, I think, a Richard Lee save, perhaps away at Southampton, I'm going to say.
Charlton. Yeah, I know it was. And I was going to say that, but let's be honest. Out of our listeners, out of our many thousands and thousands of listeners, hundreds of thousands of listeners, who is going to remember Charlton 0, Brentford 2 back in 2011? I don't think anyone.
It is the EFL overview and into the Championship, where Joe Bursic has re-cemented his spot as Stoke number one. In for the last 5 under Alex Neil. 2 wins, 2 draws, 2 clean sheets, 1 defeat, and a big save from Tommy Doyle in the win over Sheffield United. And Alex Palmer handed his chance to cement the number one spot at West Brom. We've seen this so many times. In fact, just this season, something has to give following a run of poor results and poor form under Steve Bruce. He's gone, but before that, it was obviously over to the goalkeepers. So out with David Button, in with Palmer. He's played the last 2, a defeat and a goalless draw, and a good save in this one from Elijah Adebayo.
Yeah, we do see it often where that shift happens, and it can be quite frustrating for a goalkeeper because, of course, if you're David Button, you come out the team, the manager then goes, which, and it'll often be when a manager is on maybe on their sort of last leg, so to speak, and kind of knowing that they may go, of course they'll make some drastic changes, try and get a result or two. But what then happens is the new manager comes in, and it will then be a continuation of whoever played in the last game. So this will give, no doubt, Alex Palmer a good chance. And he has been waiting in the wings for quite some time. Of course, he was number 3 last season. So now to get that opportunity is big for him. And he made a great save in this one. The deflection, tip over the bar, moved his feet really, really well. Good clean sheet. Always a tough game against Luton, but no doubt West Brom, you know, given the start of the season, they'll be hoping for a little bit better moving forward. And yeah, Joe Bursic, brilliant save this from distance. And when you see it from behind the goal and you see that the ball starts way outside the post, whipped in, it's going top corner. So to actually make the save, this is the kind of save that if you're a yard or two too far off your line, if you've closed the angle, which there is no angle from 25 yards, but if you're slightly too advanced, you can't make this save. But I think the fact that he's a yard, 2 yards off his line, he's able to move his feet brilliantly to his left, get back up into the top corner, almost have to dive back on himself because there's no other way you can make the save, get a top hand to it over the crossbar. Fantastic save.
Just to quickly go back to Palmer, one thing I didn't realise about him, he's 26.
Yeah.
I mean, this is very Sam Johnston-esque, isn't it? And a nice West Brom link there. I know he's had time on loan, Plymouth, Lincoln, I think Kidderminster to the right at the start of his career, had that, was it two-game cameo at Luton last season as well? But 26 years old, these are his first appearances for West Brom, the club he's been at since a kid.
Yeah, yeah, which is, I mean, and this is where I think certain goalkeepers, they do, and you do stay at a club for a period of time, because you always think, well, if you do end up breaking through, then you are exactly where you want to be. So it's, I do get it. I think that, and I'm sure there'll be an element of frustration for him that maybe he didn't have the number of loans. You know, even last season being a number three, I'd suggest that a 25-year-old goalkeeper, it's not the perfect situation to be in. Sometimes it can't be helped if the club are that strong on you, you staying put. But no doubt there'll be a bit of frustration, certainly with what happened last season. And also the fact that the season before he did so well at Lincoln in League One. So, you know, you could argue that maybe he should have been or could have been playing Championship a little bit sooner. But at the end, like, you know, we speak of Martinez, good example, a little bit different because, of course, that was at Arsenal. But sometimes you do have to wait that little bit longer as a goalkeeper. But if that chance does eventually come and if he takes it, there's no reason he can't play for West Brom for a significant period of time now and there could still be Premier League football ahead.
Into League One, where there were big saves in wins from Jamal Blackman and Luke McGee, big saves in draws from Ben Garrett and Jojo Wallacott, Exeter, Forest Green, Burton and Charlton, all respectively there. Connor Ripley, one penalty saved and one conceded as Morecambe fell at home to Ipswich. Carl Rushworth possibly getting away with one creeping over the line in that draw for Lincoln against Charlton. And Max Striek of Wickham fouling to concede a penalty at Oxford, but then double saving to keep it out in a big win for the Chairboys. And actually, we should just give a note for Harry Burgoyne. His first EFL appearances since May 2021 for Shrewsbury. Two on the bounce this week with Marco Morosi injured.
Yeah, indeed. A big well done to him. Someone that I work with closely and delighted for him. He's had to wait so patiently. You know, Morosi very rarely gets injured. Very consistent goalkeeper. But it's fair to say that Harry's got his chance and certainly took it. Great victory and always the buzz that comes with a game like that. And yeah, to mention a couple of the saves you just spoke of there. The save from Blackman I thought was excellent. You know, I know he's a name that we spoke of previously. Of course, Championship experience, a lot of games in the Championship, now playing in League One. But you can still see there's some real quality there. I mean, this particular save, he's a big man. He's a good 6'5", 6'6". But again, the footwork needed to get himself up to the top corner, such a short space of time as well. The shot's only from 15, 16 yards and it's arrowing in the top corner. But I thought his footwork was excellent. Good reach, big save.
And finally, in League Two, two saves of note in the fourth tier. Hartlepool's Ben Killip with decent reactions to deny Jordan Gibson of Carlisle. In vain, however, the away side taking the points. And even better reactions from Bradford's Harry Lewis in keeping out Ash Palmer of Stockport. Also in vain, as Stockport bagged a surprise win at Valley Parade. And also want to mention Thomas Holy. Back in that game at Hartlepool, the Carlisle stopper getting his stats up. According to boss Paul Simpson, he started the move for the third goal and then ran the length of the pitch to celebrate right in front of Ben Killip, to be fair.
Yeah, we certainly saw some passion from Thomas Holy. And as you say, from a stats point of view, that's for those who don't know, the players always get measured on the number of sprints in a game. So, I mean, this is a heck of a sprint. This is a good 80-yard sprint to get himself up there to celebrate with the team. And I actually feel really sorry for Ben Killip because the save he makes in the first half, I think it is, the point-blank save. If you see this in the Premier League, this is the kind of save that will get shown over and over again. So I thought the speed of reactions was something else. But yeah, in the end, it was certainly Thomas Holy's day. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, it's getting more interesting now. We're several weeks in. It is time for this. Starting the Premier League, Kepa Arrizabalaga on the board. Edison, Gogo Asasco. Hugo Lloris, toi. John Ruddy, not an attacker's buddy. Thomas Kaminski, clean defeat, one defeat, clean. Bailey Peacock-Farrell, first ever proper for the Clarets. George Long, first ever EFL for the Lions. Alex Palmer, first ever EFL for the Baggies. Ethan Horvath, 2-3. Lee Nichols, tally doubled. Jamal Blackman, he's got no lip ring, but he does have two colours in his hair. Luke McGee, on the board mark two. Carl Rushworth, simples. Jojo Wallacott, tally doubled. Max Striek, flying down the M40. Michael Cooper, 5-9. David Stockdale, rocking the Robins. And into League Two. Christy Pym, Lone Star. Bitislav Yaros, checking in. Max Crocombe, ever present. Rich O'Donnell, second 1-0 away win on the bounce. Tom King, nice chap, that man. Tay Ashby Hammond, 3-4 wins on the spin. Ross Doohan, inching ever so closer to the sound of that siren.
Thank you for that, Richard. Would you like the table?
Please.
So a clean sheet in midweek has Freddie Woodman back two clear at the top of the pile. That is now 9-13 for him. And then four goalkeepers on 7. Lawrence Figueroa, Ross Doohan doing it in 12. Michael Cooper and David Stockdale doing it in 13. Okay, so we are nearly done. But before we go, one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
So this is over in Portugal. For Rio Ave, the goalkeeper, Jonathan, who conceded a dodgy own goal, it has to be said, away to Benfica. It was one apiece at the time. They did lose 4-2 at the end. But unfortunately, just one of those moments that goes viral on social media.
It's a horrible one. So if you can imagine, it's a pass back from your right back, effectively. And if you're just a couple of yards off your line, but you want to move the ball across to the left-hand side to maybe play to the left back or clear down the left-hand side, it's how do you take that touch across your body in the safest possible way? And I don't think he's necessarily done anything wrong there, that he has looked to take it with the right foot to bring it across the body to play with the left foot, but he just doesn't get enough on it. As he's taken that touch, it's taken him back towards goal, and it's agonizingly running towards the corner of the goal, and he just can't get there quick enough and ends up in a heap in the net. Just a horrible, horrible moment.
And I did say, didn't I, that we were going to talk about Danish goalkeepers later on the pod.
Yes.
So I don't know whether you saw this, but this involves FC Copenhagen, where Matty Ryan and Camille Grabara are battling it out for the number one spot. Now, Grabara, who we spoke about actually in the pod last season, who went on a very good run for FC Copenhagen, a clean sheet run in their path to the championship. They won the title last season, of course, in the Champions League this season. They played and got thumped by Manchester City last week. But it turns out that Ryan and Grabara don't really get on.
Really?
They've been at loggerheads. So Grabara has made some questionable comments in the media. I'm going to read them out for you now. He said, "I don't want to comment on teammates' performances. This applies especially when I haven't been in the games." This was speaking to the Danish sports magazine Tipsbladet. He said, "But there is a reason why we are in ninth place in the Superliga and that the goals have been poured in. It speaks for itself." He was then pressed on this and he said, "I don't see any competition for the goalkeeper position. I have every reason to believe that I am the first goalkeeper at FC Copenhagen. The fact that we are not friends off the field does not mean that we do not respect each other." And that is not the Goalkeepers Union. We've not really heard that ever in our time of doing this podcast.
Crazy. I mean, even that as a comment, saying that it's not we don't respect each other. I mean, there's a massive lack of respect in saying that. So, yeah, I did not know that. And do you know what? Funnily enough, I mentioned, obviously, I was in Denmark for the weekend. His name came up a lot, that Camille Grabara, because, of course, he was at Liverpool for a period of time. But now, the impression I get, I haven't seen too much of him, that he can be a little bit unconventional at times, but he's a very effective goalkeeper. And interesting that he's keeping Matt Ryan out of the team. Of course, you know, it wasn't so long ago that Matt Ryan was one of the most consistent goalkeepers in the Premier League. So, yeah, sounds like it's not all hunky-dory at Copenhagen.
And I tell you where else it's not particularly hunky-dory is the rivalry that exists between Wickham and Colchester. This is kind of a long-standing rivalry from their days in the conference, but it's been fueled not only with Matt Bloomfield going to Colchester as manager, but now he's taken the goalkeeper coach with him. Lee Harrison has fled from Wickham to Colview.
Indeed, indeed. Do you know what? The goalkeeper coach merry-go-round, I feel like this season more than anywhere. But no, from Lee Harrison, he actually lives over that way, so I can see the reasons behind it. Top, top goalkeeper coach. It does now mean that Wickham Wanderers are on the lookout, I believe, for a goalkeeper coach. So it'll be interesting to see who gets that role. Feel a bit sorry for Darren Smith because he's a top goalkeeper coach who was at Colchester before. But how often do you see that when a manager goes and they decide to remove the goalkeeper coach as well? And I always think it's a belief of mine that goalkeeper coaches should be a club appointment. You know, when they're so closely linked to a manager, unless they are very much part of the staff that travels from club to club, I do think they should be a club appointment. But yep, good news for Lee Harrison. New adventure, new challenge. But yeah, I do feel a bit sorry for Darren Smith.
You know what we should have had here? An old-fashioned swap deal. That's what you want. A goalkeeper coach swap deal.
That would have worked. I could see that in time. I think at the moment, it's still not quite there. But I think when goalkeeper coaches have the same kind of status as goalkeepers, then 100% that could happen. Or transfer fees for goalkeeper coaches. That'll be the next step.
Okay, Richard, that is us for another week. Thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away.